Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast, the podcast where we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope that it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors of sexual abuse too. We hope that you find it interesting, but more than that, if you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we hope that you find our discussion empowering.
Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Alan Collins. I'm the partner who heads up the abuse team at Hugh James. And I'm joined by my colleague, Danielle. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, Alan.
And what we are going to be talking about in this podcast is institutional abuse at Hill End Hospital. So why have you chosen Hill End Hospital?
So Hill End Hospital has hit the headlines over the last couple of weeks in respect to the abuse that a number of individuals suffered during a long period of time from 1969 to 1995 when they went to Hill End Hospital. This was an NHS facility, but social services and different organisations sent children there almost as a dumping ground when they couldn't put them anywhere else.
Okay, so as I understand it, there's been a police investigation which has not resulted in any prosecutions. I suppose we ought to make it clear that where you talk about abuse, this is alleged abuse, there's been no court findings as such. So that might sound as though I'm dancing on a pinhead, but I think it's an important point to make because there hasn't been a prosecution or any court findings. But the allegations of abuse are allegations of abuse. So what was Hill End Hospital?
So it was a place that children were sent from, well, we believe it was 1969 to 1995 when the hospital closed, for a number of individuals, whether it was children with psychiatric injuries or hearing impairments or just places where children could not be placed anywhere else, so that they were sent here. And it was an institution to keep children. Some children were there for a number of years at a time.
So my understanding is, on doing some research on Hill End Hospital, it had, because it doesn't exist anymore, a very long history. And it looks as though it was very much an institution of its time, founded in the 19th century. And in the 19th century, of course, the Victorians thought it was the thing to be done to build these huge institutions to house, contain, whatever word you want to use or term to use, people that it thought that needed to be hospitalised, to put it neutrally. So I can think of, you know, Broadmoor, for example. That was a huge Victorian type institution. So up and down the land, there was these very large Victorian complexes of big, long buildings, many stories often. They all often looked quite sort of forbidding, not only inside, but from the outside, often set in sort of large grounds. I'm thinking of Broadmoor when I used to have to go and see clients, stroke patients at Broadmoor Hospital. You drive up this very long drive, lots of trees, sort of very secluded, lots of ground, impressive in a way, but also extremely forbidding. And once inside, you know, it was quite intimidating, even though I was just, you know, the lawyer visiting, so to speak. But yes, it was quite an experience. I imagine that in many ways, Hill End Hospital was quite like that. Anyway, let's get back to why you want to talk about Hill End, because I've sort of somewhat taken over the conversation, became a bit one-sided. Apologies for that. So back to you, Danny. Why do you feel it necessary to talk about Hill End today?
Well, I think it's necessary just to have a chat about it because there were a number of victims. I think the count stands now at over 100, which would suggest that there are probably more people that have, you know, sadly either passed away or aren't aware of the action that was coming forward or just don't want to come forward and admit what happened to them. But yeah, there was over 100 people that have come forward to say that they suffered alleged abuse at the home and, well, at the institution. And the investigation went on for over 3 years. So it must have had a huge impact and ongoing impact because there was no court finding, as you rightly say. But there was over 70 staff members that were also investigated. So this was a very big investigation.
Well, yeah, one of the challenges with these sort of cases is actually trying to sort out, obviously, what happened, and doing so in the context that children and young people, when put in these sorts of places, were often put there because they were already experiencing a great deal of trauma and difficulty in their lives. And I think of some of the cases I've dealt with over the years, you get patients complaining that they were abused, and then the staff members concerned, they get interviewed, investigated, and they will say, rightly or wrongly, oh, we had to physically restrain this particular person, you know, in order to protect them or to protect somebody else. So you get the same set of facts, but they then become heavily disputed because you've got the child, stroke patient, resident, alleging that they've been harmed. And then you have staff members saying, well, we had no choice but to restrain this person because of X, Y, Z. And then trying to work out exactly what happened and who's telling the truth can be extremely challenging, particularly when it's a physical abuse allegation. Sexual abuse, there can't be any legal explanation. You know, sexual abuse is sexual abuse, it's criminal, and end of. But when you get these issues about sedation and physical restraint, then it can be quite challenging to work out exactly what happened. To my mind, it often begs the question, well, what was going on in this place in order for that person to be sedated in the first place? What was going on that required several staff members to pin that person to the ground? Something must have been going on. Something must have happened. So it is difficult. And I think one has to be open-minded and objective when trying to piece together these disputed accounts, even though you've got the same sort of facts, you've got this disputed interpretation as to what happened. So I can understand why these cases are very difficult for the police to investigate. Anyway, so as I understand it from the research that you've been doing, Danny, that there are lots of complaints about being sedated, physical abuse, physical restraining, and so on.
Yes, and in addition to sexual abuses, as you've mentioned. The difficulty, especially in this specific investigation, is that there was a fire, so lots of the records that were held were destroyed. So the police would have had difficulty looking at these, and also it was difficult to establish what was going on at the time. Hertfordshire Constabulary have confirmed that this sedation would not have met today's standards, but we're looking at obviously the standard at that time. But children were being given adult doses and were repeatedly sedated during their periods of stay there.
Well, that's interesting because generally speaking, even by the 1960s, there were serious question marks over the use of sedation and the use of drugs generally to treat young people. And the question arises whether sedation was being administered for convenience or as a means of treatment. My argument would be that if drugs were being administered just to, you know, keep the patients quiet, to make life easier for the staff, I would say, well, that was illegal. If sedation was necessary to treat a patient because it was absolutely necessary because of their medical condition, that's an entirely different scenario. Sedation was applied just to keep the patients on the ward quiet, then I would say that that was unlawful. It was an unlawful administration of a drug, potentially a criminal offence, and certainly, in my opinion, an assault in civil law. So the administration of drugs to sedate patient or patients for the convenience of the staff would, in my opinion, be unlawful, be the unlawful administration of a drug potentially.
Sorry, Alan, I just want to say my understanding of having read some of the victim accounts was that the sedation was used so that they could be sexually assaulted.
Yeah, so if the patient is sedated in order to be sexually assaulted, then, in my opinion, a criminal offence had been committed, the unlawful administration of drug as well as the sexual assault, and in civil law, it would be a trespass of the person, in other words, an assault. And again, actionable in civil law. So whether in criminal law or civil law, there would be a right of action. The abuse, to put it simply, would be actionable. So subject to being able to prove what happened and getting around the time bar issue that arises because of the Limitation Act 1980, there would be a case there, certainly in civil law and probably in criminal law too.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good to say that, you know, if anyone's listening and this has impacted them or they've suffered similar types of abuse or want more information, obviously they can reach out to ourselves or ICSA are still doing inquiries in respect of institutions. The report in respect of the Hill End Hospital can be found on our link in our blog. So if people want to read more about it in respect of the findings. And there's also the Truth Project, which is an organisation through ICSA to assist people if they have experienced abuse. So again, they can find information on our blog there.
Thank you, Danny. An interesting subject for that podcast. So thank you very much. Thank you, listeners. Please do join us again for our next podcast. And if you're interested in our next podcast, we are going to be discussing Sammy's Law. So please join us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favourite podcast player. If you'd like to speak to us about something you've heard today, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.